Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Old Lady Speaks podcast on Black and White and Red All Over. This is your host, Danny, coming to you for episode number 25. You guys are going to like this one. The Jorge Martinez, or as we lovingly knew him, El Malaca. Did I get that right, Sergio? How's my accent?
Yeah, not bad. Not bad. Pretty decent, I would say.
Obviously, if Juventus defended for about 15 seconds more, we would have been in a much better mood recording this episode. But first, let me bring in the usual group of Samuel Presti. Hello, Sam.
How's it going, Danny? I would like to take a quick opportunity for a little bit of a selfish purpose. We are recording on Monday, November 9th, I would like to wish happy birthday to my dad, who usually is a listener, and I will be telling him this in a FaceTime fairly soon, but I also wanted to share it to the world because my dad is awesome. So happy birthday, Dad. I love you very much.
And also, as Juventus fans, we can wish happy birthday to our stepdad, Alessandro Del Piero. So, you know, there you go.
Also true.
Also true. We've got Chucks. Hello, Chucks.
Man, all these birthdays. Happy birthday to everyone. Always nice to have something to celebrate and, you know, given the state of the world these days. So
my birthday was 2.5 weeks ago, Chuck. So you want to wish me a happy birthday too?
I remember. I did actually in a Slack channel.
You did.
Yes. Jolly times.
Jolly times. And last but not least, Sergio. Hello, Sergio.
Hey, fellas. How you doing? Yeah. Tons to celebrate. Shout out Sam's dad. Shout out the GOAT's dad. The GOAT's birthday. I mean, just tons of good stuff. Good stuff.
Not so celebratory was the way that Juventus closed out their game at lunchtime, and for some of us, very far away from lunchtime, on Sunday. And that would be Lazio at the very, literally, the last kick of the game, snatching a point away from Juventus. And that is obviously where we're going to start this week. I was of the impression that it was more of a team combustion rather than a single player combustion. And since everybody is playing the blame game, and since in his grab bag, Sergio did not play the blame game, I will start with Sergio. Your thoughts on Juventus being 93 minutes and 50 seconds close to getting 3 points and then 10 seconds away from not getting 3 points?
Yeah, no, that was, I mean, the thing is, like, because of the form overall that we have seen from this team, it's just really easy to start scapegoating guys. And to be honest, just like watching the play, as I've seen it like 1,000 times in the replay and stuff, there's a lot of blame to go around in that play. I don't think it's necessarily fair to just say it was this one guy's fault. But if you were to play that game, the whole, you know, this is Paulo Dybala's fault is just incredible. Like, it's dumb. It's a stretch out of all stretches. Like you mentioned, I talked about that in the latest grab bag, that how can you blame a guy that wasn't even involved in the play? You know, I mean, right. He didn't get a lot of like the greatest control on the pass, and it was a throw in. So what? Like, that wasn't the last play of the game. Like, if you mark Correa right, then there's no problem, right? If you make a tackle, even Danilo on the replay, he was super close to deflecting it with his foot. I mean, so many things that could have happened, and you decide to blame the one guy who wasn't even involved on the play. Obviously, that's a little bit more to do because of, you know, his recent form and whatnot, but it's disappointing because overall I think it was a pretty good performance. I thought it was a solid game in which the manager kind of decided and kind of realized that, you know, we don't need to constantly press and be this super attacking team to get the W here, and kind of adapted and kind of threw a different, not formation necessarily, but a different style of play. And I thought there were a lot of positives in it. And now the only thing that everyone's focusing is they drop points again. Dybala pouted or whatever. Like, that to me is the bummer, because they came, they had just scored 8 goals in 2 matches against Spezia and Ferencváros, which, fine, if you don't want to take that into account, that's fine. But they were doing a good stretch, and then they had a good game, and just, you know, those last 10 seconds are going to change the whole narrative of the of the club going into the international break. And I think that's kind of a shame, because we saw some interesting things on this game especially.
Yeah, I'm in total agreement in that this was a really the overall performance of this game, the last 10 seconds notwithstanding. I mean, yes, the last 10 seconds decided the result, and, you know, dropping points always sucks, especially that way. And, you know, I've had some people talk, you know, I've seen some people pull out winning is the only thing that matters ethos, which is, yes, okay, fine. But in a big picture sort of way, this was a really good performance. Pirlo made what looked to me to be a very conscious decision to let Lazio play and go on the counter, whether that was because he wanted to use Dejan Kulusevski's strengths on the counterattack, which he's a much better counterattacker than he is a play builder like Aaron Ramsey can do, whether he wanted to conserve the team some energy in terms of the press after a really, really long stretch of games. That's another possibility. Whatever the reason, it's what he did. And Juve defended really well as a unit for almost the entire game. I hate to call him out here, but right after the game on our Slack channel, Hunter came on and said that he had been expecting the equalizing goal the entire time. And I don't know what game he was watching, because I was not obviously you're always a little bit nervous with a one goal lead, but I wasn't thinking, oh God, it's coming at any moment. I certainly was not thinking that. They had only hit the target three times in the game prior to that goal, all of which were really, really soft shots right at Chesney. So I think that this, in the overall sense, I think that this is something to build on looking forward. You know, if you keep on playing like you did the first 93 minutes and 50 seconds, you've got a team here. It's going to be really interesting. I also think that I totally agree with you, Sergio, that the vitriol towards Dybala is kind of ridiculous. I mean, it was a bad play to lose that ball under no pressure. And it's not a stretch to say that if he controls that ball, the game is probably over. But like you said, there was just a collective team brain fart on that last play. You know, Bentancur and Cuadrado are both in front of Correa. Correa may be the luckiest man in Serie A this year to be facing up against the two guys on the field that had yellow cards at that point in the game, because that's probably one of the reasons why neither of them went in very hard. Rabiot, I think, you know, pulled out of that challenge because I think he realized that if he was not going to get it, and he would have given away a penalty. I did not like the positioning that Bonucci took. I thought that he was gifting Caicedo the inside turn, which, you know, I say play him inside, let him go out, let Chesney be on the near post like he's supposed to, and force him outside. Oh, you always want to force a striker outside, which is another thing that Bentancur didn't do with Correa. I mean, you can break down that play forever, and we have 2 weeks to do it now because we've got nothing else to talk about. It's a heart-wrenching way to lose points to drop like that. But I think if you really pull back and look, there were more positives about this game than there were negatives. And we're going to have to, once everything is calmed down, I think we have to take stock of that fact.
Yeah, definitely. I think we can sit here and talk all day about whether or not, you know, Bonucci's positioning was off, or Bentancur and Cuadrado didn't really attack that ball because they weren't yellows or whatever. But also, you know, sometimes you just got to give it to them and admit that, you know, the other team plays too. You know, they also have some, you know, some credit to it. I mean, Correa's run is really good. You know, that's just a good play. And then Caicedo's shot, that's a tough shot. He's falling. He's like, it's a tough, tough shot to pull off. And he puts it in the one place that, you know, Walsh doesn't really get there. And like I mentioned before, Danilo gets like this close to deflecting it. So, you know, sometimes a tough break is a tough break, and it sucks because it seems like early in this season, every single tough break has gone against Juventus. And at some point, you can start wondering whether or not it's just tough breaks or it's a little bit more behind it, right? Because we've talked about it here before about, you know, the offside calls and the, you know, hitting the crossbar and this and that. It just seems like there's all these little tiny things are happening that are kind of like, you know, making the team drop points and
hit the bar again today,
The bar again,
or yeah, yesterday rather.
One of those things, you know, and it sucks because they've had so many games that you could just say the same thing, right? Like, oh, it's one of those things. And it's frustrating, especially because it really takes away from some of the progress we're seeing in this team, you know, especially like, I don't know, like a guy like Mehdi Demiral, who I thought was, you know, was kind of struggling as after, you know, the Barcelona game, he struggled. And then, you know, he had a couple of rough patches. And this game, he looked really, really well because I think Pirlo decided to kind of take that responsibility away from him when it came to building off the back, which was something that he was struggling. And by deciding, you know, we're going to let Lazio play, that you kind of saw the best of Demiral. And he's just a really good defender and a really stout defender. And if you don't push him out of that, you know, I don't want to say comfort zone, but if you don't ask him to do too much, he's going to be a really good defender. So all of those little things, I think, were really big positives. And it just got lost on the discourse, thanks to, you know, those last 10 seconds, which kind of sucks overall.
Yeah, I mean, so I didn't watch the game, unfortunately. I know, shame on me. Shame on me.
Gosh. Shame. I know. Shame.
And yet we still allowed you on the podcast.
Oh, yeah, I know. Who is this fraud? Get him out of here. Get him out of here. But I did get a general idea.
Inter. Don't you know.
But I did get a general idea of just the flow of the game from reading kind of the post-match recap, and thank you, Sam, of course, and watching the highlights and just kind of reading, you know, broken down analysis of the game. And yeah, I mean, generally the idea I got is indeed like Sergio and Sam said that, I mean, overall we were pretty well in control of the game. I mean, Lazio had a few opportunities here and there, but there didn't seem to be a sustained threat of like, oh my God, they got the ball again, we're going to, you know, like every time they get the ball, oh God, I feel like we're going to concede. But it seems like it wasn't that way. And indeed, from the highlights, I mean, you know, they had some opportunities, but they weren't just kind of regular opportunities. You know, that is very encouraging just to see that against a big opponent. Granted, they were missing a sizable portion of their team because of COVID. So, you know, we do have to factor that in, of course. But hey, let me try and look on the bright side, of course. And yeah, of course, with the goal, you know, we can look at the minutiae of it. But indeed, as Sergio said, you know, it was a really good strike. I mean, you do have to admit it. Caicedo is indeed falling, and he's falling and turning, and he still has to go for the far post to get enough force on the ball to, you know, kind of curve it around Szczesny and, you know, into the far post. So, yeah, credit where credit is due. But I think I'm encouraged just by the fact that, while A, defensively sounds like we were pretty solid, so that's a big, very big encouraging point. And also by the fact that Pirlo, you know, I think from the beginning, the first few games, we'd seen that Pirlo seemed to have gone for, which, fair enough, I mean, he wrote this in his thesis, and that's, I mean, he stuck to his word in his thesis of this really proactive, in your face, you know, high press, active game, intense style of play, which, yeah, I mean, you know, if you write that in your thesis, fair enough, you got to follow your word. But obviously we all, I mean, I anyway did have some concerns about that style of play. Not that I have anything against that type of play fundamentally, but it's a really difficult way of playing. Obviously, you need the types of players to play with that. And more importantly, you really need a lot of time in training to hone that kind of system. And obviously, he didn't have a preseason, which, you know, just given everything going on, you know, which is why he didn't have a preseason. So I think just on the basis of this game, it seems, I mean, it's maybe early to say, but it seems that he's said, okay, maybe let me go for a slightly more pragmatic style play just for the short term, at least, just to stabilize the team, get some good results going, get some momentum going. And maybe against the, I don't know, Beneventos or Spezias or just like, you know, the small teams, maybe then try and, you know, do the little more ambitious style of play, which I think that's, again, that's pragmatic. And I think I appreciate his humility in recognizing that pretty early on in the season. So, you know, that's an encouraging point for me. And that just tells me something about him as a coach of, you know, being willing to be flexible.
Yeah, that kind of reminds me of Antonio Conte's first season when, you know, he broke out the 3-5-2. Everyone, obviously that's his trademark now, but it's easy to forget, given everything that's happened at Juventus since then, that first attempt at the 3-5-2 was not a success. And he actually ditched it for a while. He hung it up for about 6 weeks. He must have been honing it in training because one day he brought it back. I think I even remember like seeing it come back and I was like, oh gosh, this again. And they blitzed Roma that day. And from then on, you know, that was Conte's calling card. So I think you're right in that sense. I think that this is the way that he wrote about in his thesis, the way I think he wants to play. I think he's honing that on the field. You did see it a couple of times. There was one moment early in the second half when all of a sudden you could hear from the sideline, Pirlo started screaming at somebody to press and they started doing it and forced a giveaway from Reyna that Bentancur ended up pulling a little bit wide. So I think he might selectively as we go along, and we'll see how, you know, we'll see if with some more time in training, if he's working on it, that we'll slowly start to see it unleashed on us a little bit more in the form that he wants it to come out as the season progresses.
I talked early in the season, just this whole, I kept harping on about this whole thing about identity, and just my goal and just my desire for this season to be seeing some kind of identity for Juventus. And I think having a flexible identity of like adapting to the opposition and sometimes pressing, but then sometimes staying back and, you know, depending on the situation. I think that in itself is an identity, just that kind of like chameleon type of, you know, we are going to adapt to the opposition and change based on how the opposition plays. I think that in itself is a style and is an identity. So, you know, I think it's encouraging to see that. And, you know, we'll see if it's just a fluke or if this is going to be consistently, if Pirlo is going to consistently do that.
It might be him just kind of reading the room a little bit too, where it's like his preferred guy to play as a number 10 isn't there. It's a team that has, you know, been traveling a lot and is far from full strength, just kind of at the end of their run of that, you know, we talked about at the beginning, it's 7 games in 3 weeks, which, you know, we can say that, you know, they're used to it. This is what they, you know, this is what they do. And when the Champions League starts to arrive, but 2020 is just saw them play what feels like 100 games in 2.5 months after lockdown. And now, you know, they had what, 6 weeks to get going before the new season started. So, I mean, I forget who it was, but they were saying if they're not tired by the time 2020 ends, then they're abnormal and even more superhuman than they already are as professional athletes. So
yeah, and I mean, players are supposed to have I think at least 5 days of rest between games. So I mean, they're definitely not having that now.
And and even though it feels like Italy called up about 200 players for their internet, they're playing 3 games again. You know, they've got a friendly on Wednesday. So it's just one of those situations
with whoever the local health authorities deem.
Yeah, it's a laundry list of who can't travel.
That's a whole mess in and of itself.
Yeah, and I mean, you throw that in with how Lazio's been handling the virus, which is why they weren't at full strength this week. Yeah, I mean, the virus is continuing to be a complete mess, and as we're seeing Italy's cases go up more and more and more, more players are getting affected, but, you know, getting diagnosed with it. But yeah, I mean, I'll just throw it to Sergio because he wants to say something real quick.
It's not like anybody's running away with it. Like, that's the thing. Like, Juventus hasn't looked great at moments. We all, I think, can understand that. But they're 4 points off the league, the lead, right? And AC Milan, which was looking really well, you know, just got trounced in the Europa League, I think, 3-0. They barely tied in the weekend. You know, it's not like anybody is really like pulling away while Juventus kind of figures things out, right? So especially the, I think we were talking before the podcast started, Sam mentioned that if the next, they could clinch the next round, the round of 16 of the Champions League next match day. So even though we haven't seen the best version of this team, they're well on their way to just kind of like cruise control and be right where they want to be, which is, you know, close to the lead in Serie A and, you know, in the round of 16 of Champions League. So I'm actually really relieved by that. We're not in a situation like 2015 where they were like 14 or 15 in the table for a while there. And they had to really kind of like mount a comeback to go back. Right now, they really don't have to do that. They just have to get it together for a stretch, and they're right in the thick of it. So I think that's also, I mean, let's not press the panic button just yet. That's what I would advise.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say, is that, you know, we are in much better shape right now than we were at this point in the season in the 2015-16 season, when I think they bottomed out at 12th and had to run 15 straight wins, and, you know, Simone Zaza being magic for a night to be able to win to win what was number 5 at that point. This is by no means, you know, deeper trouble than that. Yes, you can make the argument that the league is stronger than it was at that point, but it's, you know, this league and, you know, everything this year, because this year is so ridiculous. Everything is anybody's game at this point. So there's, yeah, like you said, like Sergio said, there's absolutely zero reason to start panicking right now.
Also, yes, the league is stronger, but also like Juventus is significantly stronger than that team. I mean, I mentioned it in the latest grab bag.
Very true.
I was looking at the recap of, you know, the championship video they put out. And there's a lot of moments where it's like Hernandez and Mario Lemina and like Padoin and like a bunch of these dudes, like they actually show up in the highlight video. So it's not like they were just, you know, they were rarely used guys. They actually played a lot in that season. So, you know, sure, the entire league overall is probably better, but I mean, Juventus is not, you know, 5 years later, I think they're a significantly better team. So, you know, 4 points behind overall, I think it's pretty manageable.
How dare you insult our god Padoin?
Yeah, no, the goat.
Prego di Ronaldo, noi abbiamo Padoin.
So you guys obviously aren't pressing the panic button, and that throws one of our Twitter questions out right away. But I kind of want to gauge where you guys are at, just in terms of how you're feeling overall. Because positive spin, Juventus has the second best defense in the league when they're very much trying to integrate a new system. Negative, they've got twice as many on the field draws as on the field wins. So now that trying to do the mental math in my head, you know, we're a decent amount of the way, even though it's not the biggest sample size. Where are we kind of feeling, knowing that, as I was writing down while you guys are talking here, there are 10 games between Juventus coming out of this current international break and then the very brief Christmas break that we have five, six weeks from now, which is a lot. We thought this stretch was busy. It's going to be even busier in a couple weeks.
It is a lot. It definitely is a lot, but there's some cavalry coming. I mean, De Ligt and Alexandro are supposed to be back by the time the league resumes after the international break. That's if that's what the reports have led us to believe. Makes for some really interesting conversation about where both of them fit in and what happens to the players that they might displace if they come back in. But as long as everything stays healthy and COVID free, you've got a really nice rotation in there, and you've got the guy who might on the basis of talent be your third best player in DeLict coming back into the team, which is going to be huge for a team that you already mentioned, Danny, has the best defensive record in Serie A right now. So yeah, I'm more inclined to be optimistic. You see the signs that there's been an upward trajectory to these performances, this last week to 10 days after the Barcelona game. Pirlo said maybe we needed that to kind of get snap us back into things. And it seems like they've, for the most part, done that. 4-1 against Spezia, 4-1 against Ferencváros. You can say that that's the weakest team in Serie A and in our Champions League group, respectively, but you can only play who you're in front of, and you're supposed to beat the crap out of teams like them if you're Juventus, so that's what they did. And here you have one of your main rivals, top four team that you really controlled. So I for the most part am looking at this and thinking that we could be seeing the start of some good things. Obviously that'll have to play out on the field. But I think Pirlo knows where this is going. It looks like the players are buying in, and I think that the rest of the league, if Juve come back and fire off a couple wins in a row, the rest of the league is going to start getting nervous, because it's what always happens, and we'll see how it goes from there.
You flying that Dutch flag proudly, Chuck, now that your man's coming back soon?
Yeah, my man, and with his thighs that are the size of my, torso. And the kid's like, how old is he again? 19?
21.
20? Oh, 21. Oh, okay.
Remember, he had shoulder surgery. Say that three times fast. He had it on his 21st birthday.
Oh, yes. So. Yeah. That's quite the way to – it's funny. If we were American, you would say, like, wow, what a way to – celebrate my 21st birthday. But since he's Dutch, 21st birthday is
not. You're kidding? Anything. He got the good drugs for his 21st birthday. What are you talking
about? most of the drugs are legal in our country anyway, so it's whatever. But let's not turn it political. Although there's some funny news about drugs, but well, I'll talk about that off air. I shouldn't say that on there. But Freudian slip. But no, I mean, yeah, how am I feeling about Juve now? I think neutral, not optimistic, but not pessimistic, just kind of neutral. Because look, on one hand, performances have been up and down and results have definitely been up and down, but at the end of the day, like Sergio said, we're only 4 points off the top, and that's like, it's almost ridiculous, really. Like, I mean, we really haven't played, champagne football, and we're only 4 points off the top. With AC Milan looking, very impressive. But even with them looking very impressive, they're still only 4 points ahead of us, and I think only 2 points or so ahead of Sassuolo, I want to say. Let me quickly check that as I'm talking. 2 points. Wow, I have good memory. 2 points off Sassuolo, yes. Who have also been in great form. But I think just the thing with this season, and I've said this multiple times, and you all have said it as well, is just that there are so many variables this season that it's really hard to kind of give any kind of educated guess/analysis about what's going on, because there's just so much. As they say, I remember from my statistics class, my teacher would always say, noise. It's basically noise. When you have like a variable, or when you have an equation used to, like, let's say predict, the rainfall, the amount of rainfall coming in like tomorrow. Then you have like variable number 1, 2, 3, and then you always have this error rate or this error term at the end, which is basically just statistician saying like, okay, this is kind of the part where we don't really know what the hell is going on. So, I mean, but we know there are things that we have not predicted or are not able to estimate correctly. So we're just going to kind of put this error term here, and that's going to kind of catch everything, all the weird random stuff that we're not really sure about. And I feel like this season, that error term is really large in terms of like being able to predict results and being able to estimate performances of teams. It's just difficult because there's so much noise, there's so much randomness in the equation, mostly caused by COVID, but then also just, well, okay, mostly caused by COVID, which then causes a really condensed, really, really condensed schedule of 7 games in like, what was it? I don't know how many weeks it was again. I forget. Was it? Yeah, I forget how many. Anyway, 7 games in like a very short period of time. I think 3 weeks or something was that. So yeah, then you have, you know, that caused by COVID. And then what does that cause? Well, ridiculous amount of injuries. I mean, I've been reading just in other leagues as well. Players and coaches around the leagues have been complaining, rightly so, about the same thing. Like, this is really unsustainable. Like, this is going to catch up on players in a really bad way. So, you know, I think we're all just kind of waiting for the reckoning on that one. And yeah, plus what I mentioned last week, I mean, you know, you can be preparing for a game on Friday and talking about like, oh, okay, Real Madrid have an easy game tomorrow, and then suddenly 5 of their best players could get COVID, and then, well, things just changed, you know, which can happen. I mean, it just can happen. So I think there's just so much noise and so much randomness this season that, I mean, I just find it difficult to really give any kind of educated opinion on the season. But I think in general, like I said, I'm encouraged by the fact that Pirlo's shown flexibility in his tactics and the willingness to be pragmatic. And I think that given the experience in the team, that will be taken on pretty well. I mean, the likes of Chiellini, Bonucci, Buffon, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo, even Morata as well. I mean, he's 27 already, so he's really quite experienced. Players like that will understand, like, okay, there are times where we just all have to hunker down and just soak up the pressure and then counterattack really effectively through the likes of Chiesa and Kulusevski and Ronaldo and Morata. So, I mean, I still don't want to say with certainty that we're going to win the Scudetto. I'm not really sure. But at the end of the day, I just want to have a season in which we have some good performances and in which I can say, okay, I see a future for this team.
Yeah, I think the key was, like Chuck said, you know, it's hard to make like a good prediction, you know, like a professional prediction. But since I'm just a guy on the internet, I'm gonna say that I'm cautiously optimistic. I'm really optimistic just because of these two things. I, you know, obviously De Ligt coming back is huge, but especially, I mean, this is a guy who's arguably a top 10 center back in the world. So if you can just bring that guy in, you know, that's immediately an upgrade over whatever you have. So that's going to be huge. But also, and almost more importantly to this team, Alexandro coming back, I think, is massive. And it's going to be huge for this team that has kind of like gone through, you know, after shipping out, you know, a local favorite of us here, Mattia De Sigrid, you know, you don't really, you know, it's been kind of like a revolving door in that left flank. They've tried out a few guys. They've tried out Kulusevski. They've tried out Chiesa. They've tried out Frabotta. And none of them have really just been good enough to really say that they have solidified that position. So to have Alexandro back, a dude who, you know, we might say, oh, he's, you know, he's not as spectacular. He could be better, whatever. Like, he's a rock solid guy. Like, he's just a competent, good guy to have on the left. And so far, this team hasn't had that. Which honestly, like, if you discount essentially an entire flank, how can you really correctly assess what this team looks like or what this team can do? And that's kind of like the problem that so far Pirlo has had. So I'm really, really looking forward to those two guys coming in and Andrea Pirlo actually having a full squad and you know, kind of like a full deck of cards to play with and then start really making the, you know, the actual judgment. So, yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic, especially because just overall that the, you know, the fact that no one has really ran away with the Serie A or with Champions League. I mean, if you look at the tables all over Europe, I mean, Real Sociedad is top of the table in Spain. I think Leicester City is top of the table in the Premier League with like Manchester City and some other teams like way down below. I mean, just overall, it's kind of like all over the place, right? So I'm cautiously optimistic about what this team can do in this season. But first, we have to see them, you know, full strength at the end of the day.
Sergio channeling his inner Italian, saying that he's most optimistic because a couple of defenders are coming back.
Definitely. I mean, definitely. You have to. That's the team. That's the team. That's who you are. And I don't like, I want to sound like the worst type of guy, but it was like Juventus needs to defend well. That's just something they need to do. And that was one of the parts that people were really upset about. And it's one of those dumb things that people get upset about. Like last year, oh, the t-shirt doesn't have any stripes. It's like, oh, and it's this whole huge esoteric deal. But one of those things actually is Juventus defending well. And if they don't, you do miss a little bit of the essence of the club. So I'm really excited to have those two guys back. I think they're going to be a real asset for this club moving forward.
All right, we'll hit on the Champions League real quick before we wrap things up with our usual Twitter questions. It's weird to say after 1 3-week stretch of games that we're now halfway through the group stage, but we're halfway through the group stage. And it's played out, I think, like a lot of people have thought, maybe not with the results, maybe, but just how quickly Juve and Barcelona have separated from Dinamo Kiev and Ferencváros. So knowing that Juventus can advance to the knockout round with a win in their first Champions League game back and get a little bit of help as well, I guess kind of the same type of question. How are we feeling about the Champions League, knowing that, I mean, it kind of feels like if Juve take care of business in their next two Champions League games, it's pretty much just playing for top of the group against Barcelona come the middle of December, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that I also really like the idea of, you know, if we can clinch this game and you know, for the I wrote this in my recap of the Ferencváros match, but the math is Juventus need to win and Dinamo Kiev need to not win. So we said in the beginning, hopefully without tempting the wrath of the whatever from high atop the thing, that's likely. Getting that out of the way, you know, it provides Pirlo with an opportunity to maybe rest a couple of guys against Dinamo Kiev, play some of the bottom of the depth chart, you know, have Gigi play against Kiev and then maybe make a run against Barcelona at the for the top of the group at Camp Nou. Was it Chuckston mentioned it before we hit record that Ansu Fati is out for several months now for Barcelona? That was Danny that mentioned that. So that's a loss for them, and you know we'll have come up on them, you know, six weeks more developed than we had been before, and it might be able to snag something. I'm not necessarily begging for that. Like I said, when we first started talking about the group stage a couple of episodes ago, all I really care about is getting out of the group, because the benefits of finishing first in the group have diminished over time with the new rules. If you get this done now, then that has a knock on, that can also have a knock on effect for some Serie A games that you might really want to win in order to better position yourself to make a run, you know, towards the end of the andata when you have Milan and Inter in relatively quick succession. I think you have both of them in the space of three rounds towards the end of the schedule. I think that gives Pirlo a good chance to make sure that everybody is fresh if you go as early as you can. So I personally am expecting him to just go straight out at Ferencváros and just go for a crush and hope that that Barcelona pick up the right result and that Juve are, you know, through with two games to spare and then just engineer things from there.
Yeah, you know, it's funny with the Champions League, and I mean, you mentioned it a bit in passing, Sam, but indeed in the Champions League, I'm just looking at the groups, and I mean, a lot of the groups are in real flux as well. I mean, you know, you look at the Manchester United group, it's a toss-up. The Inter's group, Group B, I mean, it's a complete toss-up as well.
Even except for where Inter is.
Yeah. Oh, snuck that one in there, did he?
Hey.
Oh, he took the ball past the defender and just left him for dead there. Brilliant. But yeah, even Group A with Bayern and Atletico, you know, they have a kind of, I mean, Atletico not quite safe there either. And I mean, well, okay, Manchester City group, fair enough. That's all done. So yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of the groups are really in a lot of flux as well. And I think the thing is with, so going back to our group with, you know, Barcelona and Juve, Kiev and Ferencváros, you know, it's even Barca, and I've been following them a bit as well. Even Barca haven't, you know, looked great either. I mean, they've been, frankly, as erratic as we've been, you know, good performances and then kind of weird and then kind of not really knowing what's going on. And then now Ansu Fati injured. So they've been pretty tipsy-turvy as well. And again, just a lot of other clubs have been as well. United winning 5-0 against Leipzig and then losing to Istanbul Başakşehir here. Oh, I'm flexing my vocal cords this episode.
Here.
Yeah, Başakşehir. Yeah, man, I knew that, man. I'm just testing you.
Listen to Jamie Carragher and the Scouser accent on CBS All Access pronouncing that name. That's just
That's funny. But yeah, and you know, I think the thing with knockout competitions is it, you know, I think it's one of those things where you can have your league form, you can be all over the place, but once the Champions League goes on, suddenly everybody just, like, you know, gets back into things. And, like, I think that happens with a lot of teams. I mean, I don't know necessarily with Juventus, but I think that happens with, you know, frequently with other teams where it's just, it's an on-off switch between the league and the Champions League where they're just, I mean, and it's Jekyll and Hyde kind of thing. So, and yeah, like I said, I think knockout competitions kind of lend themselves to that kind of randomness of like, okay, now we're on, you know, now. Whereas in the league, it's like, okay, well, it's match day 10. Cool. We got match day 10, but we still have 28 other match days to go. So I think that's a mentality thing as well. But yeah, I mean, we'll progress from the group just fine. I'm not too worried about that. How far will we go? I mean, it's just, I think we'll probably get through the round of 16, but I don't have too much faith past the quarterfinals. Honestly, I think that's when you really filter out, you know, the kind of random, the flukes from, you know, the real.
And it all depends on the draw too.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean, like, for instance, you saw, what was it? PSG last year. I mean, their side of the draw was, I mean, fortunate to say the least. I mean, they have, what was it?
Would have been our side of the draw if we had managed to.
Yeah, true that. That's, yeah. Yeah, I mean, because they had, what was it again? Atalanta, Leipzig. I'm missing one. Dortmund. They had Dortmund yeah. Atalanta, Leipzig. So, I mean, you know, compared to Bayern's run, you know, I mean, that was night and day there. So, but yeah, I mean, overall, I think probably quarterfinals is going to be the end of the line for us. But again, I mean, if I see the type of level of performances in the Champions League that, you know, again, with the whole identity thing, then I'll be okay with that. I think I'll be okay with that.
It, honestly, I'm a bit shocked to hear you say that the seeding doesn't really matter all that much, because I think right now there's only one team I would not want to face in the round of 16, and that is Bayern Munich. And they are, honestly, like, straight up, like, they're definitely going to qualify in the first place. They're kind of like the only team that's still playing really well overall, obviously, because outside of that, even the big names, you know, the Liverpools, the Manchester Cities, the whatevers, you know, they have been inconsistent as well. Barcelona, Real Madrid, you know, you look around and realize that even if you qualify in second and you get, I don't know, Liverpool, I don't think it's so insane to say that, you know, they have a chance there, or they, you know, they draw Manchester City or, you know, whoever. I think the only team I really, really don't want to face is Bayern Munich at all. If we can just avoid them completely, that'd be the best. But, you know, just in general, I would like to avoid them as much as possible, because that's the team that, to me, just in Europe in general, has looked the best overall. So obviously, I think we all agree. I think the qualification to a round of 16 is pretty much a done deal unless something, truly catastrophic happens. But, I would like to see them top of the group because of the outstanding bet I have with my girlfriend, which hinges upon who wins the group. So I would very much not like to be out 100 smackers buying the new Barcelona jersey for her. So that's one
thing. Declare an interest, young man. Declare an interest.
Definitely. But also, because I really, really want to avoid Bayern Munich. And to me, they seem like the one team that would just be overwhelmingly favored, not only over Juventus, but I think over any team in Europe right now. So I think that if they have a chance to snag that, and, Sam was mentioning, maybe rotating the squad a little bit, but if you can somehow get to that final game against Barcelona in Barcelona, just, if you have a chance to snag that first place, I think that'd be important just in order to avoid a tougher draw in the early going.
I mean, the tiebreakers involved, like, assume that Juventus and Barcelona win out going into that game, the tiebreakers involved would be really interesting because Juve would essentially have to win by 3 goals in Camp Nou in order to, if they were to go in trailing by 3. So it is a little bit, it's kind of difficult for me to see it right now, but who knows, maybe they could drop a point here or there in between. The one thing that I wanted to say, this is edging into transfer rumors, so, sorry for flashbacks on that one so soon after the deadline, but I do distinctly remember Juventus being connected with Marcus Thuram over the summer, and man, the way he played this last match day against Real Madrid, that was something. And if we're in on him and we, maybe were to pick him up in the next couple of transfer windows, I would not be unhappy of that. Although I do have to say, Papa Thuram is probably in all kinds of shame that his son grew up to be a striker. But yeah, I would very much like to see that.
All right, let's start the Twitter questions here from Avanith Kumar. Do you think Morata's current form will become the new norm, or will his performance become more like his showing against Lazio, where he does a lot more of the dirty work with a goal here and there?
I don't know. I think Morata has, even at his best in Juventus, he was kind of like a streaky guy. He, if you just look at his numbers overall, even again in his best season for Juventus, he wasn't kind of like the dude to score, 20, 25, 30. So this is kind of like a little bit, then again, there are not many guys that can score 25, 30 in a season, right? But, overall, I don't think he's a super high volume striker in the, in his career. So if you just go by that, I would say he, he's kind of on a hot streak right now, but I would expect to see him be more of a, a dirty work type of guy. But, who knows? I mean, sometimes we either overvalue or undervalue the, the emotional aspect of the game, but the way he's been playing, and the way he keeps saying that he's super happy to be back and that he loves the club and that, he should have never have left and that he feels wanted and all this, kind of like lip service is doing, maybe it does make a difference. Maybe this is kind of like the breakout season for him. And I mean, who knows, right? But right now, if I had to make a bet on a like over under for goals for him, I don't know, like 20, I think just historically you have to go under, right? But there's a chance because we're seeing a guy that I don't think we have seen in a while, just the way he's playing and the way he's scoring. It's really, really impressive.
I mean, that's the one season after Real Madrid bought him back when he, Zidane benched him but threw him off the bench most games. He almost scored 20 goals that year in La Liga. And I mean, it's easier to score in La Liga than it is to score in Serie A. And yes, he always has been a streaky guy. But also, when it comes to the ins and outs of this question, I don't think that, being a dirty work guy is necessarily a bad thing either. If he's going to be the dirty work guy and do that really effectively the way he did against Lazio, I'm down for that. I mean, that's what wormed Mario Mandzukic into all of our hearts over the last couple of, you know, over 4 or 5 years. Either he's going to, either whether he's a high volume scorer or not, he's providing a lot of valuable play on the field. And I think that that is enormous to the way the team is playing right now.
And frankly, I think that's kind of the modern striker anyway today. I mean, the modern striker is the striker that can pass, that can shoot, that can head, that can do build-up play, that can, you know, cut inside from the wing and then score and give assists. You know, that is kind of the modern striker. So I think that's in line with, you know, with really with the times. As a side note, I going back kind of way back to the thing about the teams and Liverpool and stuff and Bayern Munich, I think actually I do disagree with Sergio there. I think Liverpool, okay, that 7-2 aside, which I know is a big aside against Aston Villa, I actually do think that they're not quite on the same level as Bayern, but I think them and Liverpool and Bayern are kind of the two teams that are, I think, on hottest, most consistent form this season so far anyway. So I would fear Liverpool equally as I do Bayern.
Well, let's get to the top of the group so we can avoid them both. I mean, it's not like I'm, you know, super confident against Liverpool, but, you know, I do think they haven't been the, you know, the absolute, you know, machine that Bayern is. So, you know, I would rank them lower, but I do think they're, I mean, if they were to play Juventus, I do think Liverpool would be favored for sure.
I think we can all agree is that from what we saw with Morata and Kulusevski, what they did on the counter on Sunday, we wouldn't necessarily be opposed to that. Just we saw how much space that they had to work with. And I mean, Kulusevski especially, that was pretty fun to see him kind of channel his inner Parma days and stretch his legs out. And really, I mean, he had so much room to work with sometimes that he was dangerous when he was on the ball. So next question here from Garfield McHumphreys. There might be one of the best names we've had yet. Can you think of a way to get all these players on the field at once? Would it even work at all? Arthur, Bentancur, Rabiot, Ronaldo, Morata, Dybala. We are playing ultimate fantasy football here as Chucks rolls his eyes.
Yeah, not if you want to, you know, don't want to concede less than like 10 goals in a game. No, I mean, it's nice if you want to play against, again, Benevento or something. But, you know, in all seriousness, that's kind of kamikaze football playing. If I recall correctly, you said Morata, Ronaldo, Kulusevski, Arthur Bentancur. I mean, it's not completely impossible, but I think you're flirting with massive imbalance if you add like Dybala and stuff to that too, because I think that's what some people are saying. They're like, oh, if there's only a way we could put Chiesa, Chiesa, Kulusevski, Morata, Ronaldo, and Dybala all at the same time. I'm like, yeah, let's just concede 10 goals. Why not? You know? So yeah, I mean, it's nice if you want to play against like Benevento or something, but I don't think, frankly, practically, that's it's a fun idea, but no, I don't think that would work.
Maybe if you're like, you know, in the last 5 minutes of a do or die game, sure, get them all out there, especially when you've got five subs. But from the start, you really have to have something up your sleeve if you think that that's going to work from the start.
I mean, look, humoring the whole thing, that's a 4-3-3. It's not like, you know, I mean, the formation is kind of there, right? 4-3-3, and then could you kind of figure it out? It's not something.
Or maybe a 4-3-1-2 with Dybala in the hole.
Yeah, something like that. I mean, it's not super far-fetched to see. Then again, if you switch Arthur with Pjanic, we saw that multiple times last year. I mean, some sort of combination with that. Instead of Morata, it was Higuain. But it was kind of that same idea, and then we saw it didn't work all that well. So, I mean, I wouldn't be against it. I think if you can pull it off, you know, more power to you. But we'd have to see a lot more from either Bentancur or from either Arthur or, I mean, Rabiot. To be honest, Rabiot is really good right now. But, you know, from either of those guys to prove that they can thrive in that type of system. And then a lot of things kind of figure out by themselves. But, you know, It is a little far-fetched, I think. There's a possibility it could maybe work. The formation is there, but we saw something similar last year, and the results were pretty underwhelming, I would say.
Based on Chuck's reaction, he's starting to come around to it.
Well, no, you know, it's funny, actually. No, because I was just thinking something. I don't think, in principle, I'm even against the sheer thought of throwing on, what, 4.5 strikers all on the pitch at the same time. You know, I'm fundamentally not even against that, because I looked at Liverpool's lineup for the weekend against Manchester City, and they had, you know, they had Mane, Firmino. Let me see who else they looking very quickly. Yeah, they had Salah, Mane, Firmino, Jota, and then Wijnaldum, Henderson, etc., etc. Then their back four. So they essentially had 4 strikers on the pitch at the same time. I mean, really, essentially. And, you know, they still played really well. And, I mean, they held City to, obviously, to a draw. Looking at the statistics, City had 2 shots on target the entire game. And then, well, 4 shots off target. Likewise, Liverpool had 3 shots on target, 4 off target, and 45% possession. So, you know, clearly the concept of playing that many strikers on at the same time isn't impossible at all, but it's just that what do these strikers do? You know, Salah, Firmino, Mane, and Jota, they press like crazy. I mean, they are defenders, essentially, you know, and that's like they embody the concept of defending from the front. So, you know, if, okay, fair enough, put up that many strikers as long as they essentially defend.
And if Marcello Lippi in 2006 taught us anything, playing with 4 strikers on the field can be done at a very high level. So,
hear, hear.
Sorry, I was listening to a podcast earlier and they referenced the semifinal against Germany in 2006. So I've got it on the mind.
Totti Del Piero,
Gilardino, and I'm blanking on the last one. But it was basically.
No, it was Iaquinta.
Iaquinta, yeah.
It was Iaquinta.
Iaquinta. Yeah. Is our friend. Rhett, we got a couple questions about Dybala, and I'll wrap things up on one of them from @Elaw20. Do you think Dybala's slow start in the team so far stem from coming back from a significant muscle injury that he picked up a few months back at the end of the Serie A season, or do you think it's from a lack of understanding of how to play in Pirlo's system?
I think it's a combination of both. Right now, at this point, we don't know. I mean, there's been so many theories thrown around. It was that muscle injury, and then he had a gastrointestinal issue that prevented him from going to the Argentina national team, or he had to be dismissed from the Argentina national team, something like that. And, you know, you come in and Alvaro Morata is on fire, and, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo, whenever he's fit, he's going to play. So I think it's a little bit of, you know, he's not in his best form. There's not necessarily a natural position for him to play in right now. You know, I think when the season started, we all thought he would be that pair with Cristiano Ronaldo, right? So far, it hasn't really happened because of Alvaro Morata and his great form, you know. I think we're you know, overreacting a little bit to the fact that he is having a rough start of the season. And I have criticized him for that as well, because we expect a lot more of him. We expect a lot more from the number 10 in Juventus. We expect a lot more from a guy who reportedly wants to make 12 million euros a year. And, you know, I think that kind of has tainted the view from a lot of the fans a little bit in that sense. But I think if right now I'm not too worried about whether or not Dybala is going to end up being a big part of the team. He's way too talented. He's way too good. He has shown multiple times that he can be a very good player. If we're still having this very same conversation in, I don't know, February or March or whatever, I think at that point we can start worrying. But, you know, right now I think there's been a lot of factors that kind of give him an out if you want to give him that out. If you don't, then your mind's kind of already set on selling him. So I don't think it's really... I mean, pretty much nothing he could do is going to convince you otherwise. But I think I'd be inclined to just, you know, give it more time before really panicking about him.
I'm with you on that, too. I mean, he's also been, like we talked about Alvaro Morata being streaky before. Dybala's had his streaky side as well. I mean, it, and it's amp, I mean, a lot of it, I think, gets amplified by the fact that Paulo Dybala is one of those players who, when he's really confident and really doing well and really sure of himself, he's doing things like beating the best goalkeeper in the world on a free kick from 2 feet off of the end line, like he did last year. Whereas when he's not feeling it, when he's not, you know, when he doesn't have his confidence up, he really, you know, his body language changes. It makes it look like, it makes him look petulant and less, you know, less committed, when I don't really think that's the case. I mean, the, you know, he's, I agree, like you said with Sergio, I think, you know, coming back from a really significant muscle injury that he probably made worse by trying to play in the Lyon game. And also, you know, we don't forget that he had a particularly long fight with COVID during lockdown, and then came right out of the gate and played under Sadi during the restart a lot more minutes than I think we thought, than I think we were expecting to see out of him after having had COVID for as long as he did. So it, you know, we don't know if that has an is having an after effect on him right now either. Yeah, I'm all for giving him a little more, you know, a little more time to settle, to get, you know, to get himself physically right, which I still don't think he is, and soak up some of Pirlo's tactics and see where it leads.
Yeah, and I think just, you know, the point you mentioned about, you know, the body language doctors and, you know, all the comments that, oh, he was pouting and he's like, you know, throwing tantrums on the pitch and whatnot, like, just get the hell out with that argument, man, because it's just, I have no time to start doing that. I mean, Gonzalo Higuain, the dude pouted like crazy for his entire career, and the guy backed 20 plus goals every season. Cristiano Ronaldo, he pouts like a mother something every time you don't pass him the ball. And he's one of the greatest players of all time. Like, these dudes are competitive. They obviously, like, you know, it's hard to, you know, you're performing badly, you're not doing your job. Yeah, you're going to react to it. Like, you know, it's something that, you know, in my opinion, I think once when Juventus signed Ronaldo, you know, 2-3 years ago, I wrote a piece about the fact that, you know, when he played for other teams, I used to be like, oh, look at him pouting. Like, this is not about you, pal. This is like a team game. But now that it's like in your team, you're like, oh, because he's a competitive dude and he wants to score. And like, you know, he's an emotional dude. So I think it's just, you know, whenever something like that happens, I think you just see what you want to see and kind of like read into it what you want to, you know, read into it. So, you know, I just wanted to mention that, because it's at this point, the conspiracy corner on Dybala is freaking insane. Yeah, he's having a rough patch, but I mean, let's not blame him for every single thing that Juventus, you know, has done bad or something.
Let the record show that I still dislike Ronaldo. Just, I have nothing to add about the Dybala case. I just wanted to say that.
I was going to say, like, I am multiple times on record as saying that I am not the biggest fan of Cristiano Ronaldo. And yet, you know, you didn't get the same kind of talk when Ronaldo had that really rough streak in November and December from last year. And I, you know, so I think it's, you know, it's gotta be, you've got like we said, you gotta give him some time.
These are competitive dudes, really, really competitive dudes. I mean, things aren't going their way. Of course, they're going to show some, you know, some disappointment out there on the pitch, especially when there's like a gazillion cameras on you at all times. Like, you know, if I had cameras on me when I'm, you know, filling out my Excel spreadsheets and something's not working quite right, then everyone would be like, oh, what a dick. But, you know, I mean, it is one of those things. Like, I mean, it caught him at a couple bad moments, like every player has ever done, and people are reading way too much into it. And it just, you know, it's upsetting how the, like, you know, narratives kind of like build around out of nothing. So I just kind of wanted to put that out there.
I'll wrap things up on this note. It is a good thing that there were no cameras around me at 5:24 a.m. when Lazio scored the game-tying goal on Sunday. So let's just say that.
he would have a bad problem attitude. That'd be a problem. He'd be writing blogs now about it.
I know. Thank you all for your Twitter questions. As always, you can send them to us whenever you like at Juventus Nation on Twitter. You can also find us on Facebook. Search Black and White and Red All Over. As is the norm, you can find us on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. Again, search Black and White and Red All Over. Like, subscribe, write a review, rate us, all that good stuff. We appreciate it. I especially like, let me pull it up real quick, the review that we got a few weeks back. It was pretty amusing. The person said, "Thank God somebody is making some good, consistent English content." So there you go. If you want a review about our podcast, is that somebody is praising God for us that we're finally doing it. So on that note,
that guy.
Yeah.
Our mothers have always said that we were God-given gifts, right? You know, all four of them.
On that note, for Sam, for Chucks, and for Sergio, this is Danny saying thank you very much for listening. Stay safe out there. Hopefully we don't have to hear about any coronavirus cases over the international break, and we'll talk to you guys next week.